Welcome to Global Heart to Heart Radio at globalhearttoheart.com. This is Mary Alice, and today I am so excited to have Robertson Work return to Global Heart to Heart to share with us from his first of five books titled A Compassionate Civilization, The Urgency of Sustainable Development and Mindful Activism, Reflections and Recommendations. And it is Rob's reflections and recommendations that we will be focusing on in the quest to create a new future of a compassionate civilization in the here and now. In his book, Rob asks us purposely thought-provoking questions, as well as encouraging us to act and act with urgency for the highest good of all humanity. And that means every single one of us, locally and globally. And it is exactly why we are here today, to evoke, to arouse you to think, to spark your consciousness about how we will create a new future of a compassionate civilization in the here and now. Or as Rob puts it, celebrating the victory before the victory. First, let me tell you a little about Robertson Work. Rob is a social and ecological activist, a nonfiction author who has led his life dedicated to service, working with kindness and compassion for the benefit of all peoples and the planet. He is the founder of the Compassionate Civilization Collaborative and a founding supporter of the Global Compassion Coalition, which is a global movement of movements of social justice and ecological regeneration. Rob has worked in over 50 countries and for 16 years was a United Nations Development Program Principal Policy Advisor on decentralized governance. He was also a professor of innovative leadership for sustainable development at New York University Wagner Graduate School of Public Service. He also served as the national and regional director for the Institute of Cultural Affairs, conducting community, organizational, and leadership initiatives nationally and internationally. Rob is a man with a gentle and loving heart, and his writings guide us to social, spiritual, and self-transformation. He is very much a wise elder who exemplifies the compassionate planetary human he urges us to become. And I am honored to be in his presence. So, Rob, thank you so much for taking the time to share your insights with us today in this first of many discussions to come. And thank you for your lifelong dedication to service and the journey you have led and continue to lead to bring much-needed change to our world. I'd like to thank you, our listeners, for taking the time to join us in this ongoing multilogue and considering the many questions before us at this critical time in the evolution of humanity. Our discussion today begins with a review of the prologue. There are questions Rob asks us to consider. Our discussion today begins with a preview of the prologue. There are questions Rob asks us to consider, to imagine how to create a better world. And I want you to remember the energy of imagine. There is so much in this book to consider, so we will begin at the beginning with the prologue, which opens, and I quote, "As we begin, let us remind ourselves who we are as human beings, what constitutes a human society, and how far we have come as a civilization." And, wasting no time, in the second paragraph of the prologue, Rob asks us four questions, philosophical, but urgent and practical all at the same time. First, what is a human being? What is its full potential? What is our ultimate purpose? And what constitutes development? Rob, thank you again for taking the time today. And now I will finally turn it over to you.
Oh, Mary Alice, thank you. Thank you for all you are and do. Thank you for your invitation, your kindness, your two kind words, and for this moment. Here we are, alive together. What a gift to be conscious, to be trying to be a caring being in this mysterious time and place. So thank you for this opportunity to dialogue with you today. As you know, the book was published in 2017. It's still relevant. A lot of things have changed. We'll talk about that later. But I'm glad you emphasized the questions, because questions are very important. Why are questions important? Why are they important to me? Why are they important in life? Questions can create dialogue. Without questions, if we just start talking at each other without questions, we may not be able to listen. So questions help us reflect and help us listen to each other, to others, and to ourselves. So these questions, as you indicated, are very deep questions, but ones that we often don't ask. You know, who goes around asking, what's a human being? Or what is the purpose of society? What does it mean to be an earthling on this beautiful planet that we're part of? So these questions are provocative. They spark thought. And as you said, they spark imagination. And I'm glad you touched on the importance of image and imagination. Because we are rational, yes. We need language. But we also need the visual and the imaginal. One of the greatest scientists, Albert Einstein, said its imagination was more important to him than anything else. He actually imagined himself on a light, was thinking of E equals MC squared. He said, to imagine, to view images, to dream, these are critical faculties as humans, I would submit, and many would agree with me. Some may consider that proposition. Again, because of our evolution, being on a planet of over 4 billion years of change, and of a species, of hominids and Homo sapien, that is 300,000, 50,000 years in change. At this moment of globalization, we're all together. You know, now we're all together in real time. We can know what's happening anywhere on the planet at any second. It is amazing, isn't it? And it's on social media, and it's like every second we can be aware of what's happening on every inch of this beautiful planet. This has never happened before. You know, human beings used to dream of beyond their locality, but now we actually are living this global, local reality. So it's more important than ever to ask, what is a human being? And this allows for dialogue. Now, dialogue, or I like your word, multilog. Multilog, many of us, all of us, asking questions, sharing our thoughts. Because often what we see in the media, people are yelling at each other. I believe this, you're wrong about that, you're stupid, you're crazy, you're... And so, what if we ask, let's stop and breathe and look at each other and say, well, who are we today on this planet? What does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be this mammal, this conscious, reflective, rational, imaginal mammal that we call Homo sapien, the human? And then what is development? How How do we develop ourselves as we look back over the last 100 years, 500 years, 2,000, 8,000 years, and then move forward, back and forth of reflecting on, we see the incredible development of awareness and thought and knowledge. And now we're talking about artificial intelligence, you know? What does it mean? We're carbon-based intelligence. What is silicon-based intelligence of a robot or an artificial being? So those are a few thoughts before getting into the more substance.
In the prologue, you also go into material and economic progress and what it has done in our world and why it's really not working. Would you like to speak to that?
When I looked at the history of international development, the focus at first seemed to all be on economic development, you know, the gross national product and extraction, all the concerns of capitalization, of capitalism. But that's not all that is to, there is to be a human being. That's only the economic, and that's only part of the economic. International development began to look at the social dimensions, you know, health and education, not only the economy. The UN began talking about human development. How do we monitor human development? And so the UN created the Human Development Index, and we can go see how different countries compare in health and education and economic development. We hadn't really picked up governance yet. We've had the economic and the social, but how do we govern ourselves? Because democracy has not always been around. Democracy is very new in our evolution. Before, we had the emperors and empresses and the kings and queens and the nobility telling us, us peasants, what our place was and what to do. But with the invention of democracy, we said, we should ask everyone. That's what we call the vote or the election. Let's ask everybody in our society, what do you think about this policy, about this person, this view, this value? And so the democratic revolution of the last few hundred years is amazing. And now we won't go into it, but it's being challenged. You know, some people are saying, no, we shouldn't be asking everyone. You know, some people aren't smart enough or educated enough, or they don't agree with me. I don't want to ask everyone. They don't agree with what I think. So authoritarianism is sort of rising up and saying, well, let's let the powerful and the strong decide. You know, they are smart. They can access information. Again, so you have the economic dimension of development, the social dimensions of development, the political dimensions of development or governance. And we now need to look at all of those, but that's leaving out perhaps the most important one. And what is that? The environmental or ecological dimensions of development. Because again, as I mentioned earlier, we humans, we are part of this earth behind, you see this picture behind me? That's a picture of Mother Earth, as you know. And that's all of us. That's our selfie. Without the earth air, there is no life. Without earth water, there is no life. Without air soil, there is no life. Without earth plants, there is no life. Without earth animals, there is no life. So what does it mean to be a human being? We don't live in a world. Remember when we used to, when I was a child, I was taught I lived in a world. And I remember when I discovered, no, I don't live in a world. I live as part of a planet, a living being, Gaia. And that was a revolution of consciousness, realizing that I don't just live in a social human world of institutions and infrastructure. I am a planetary being. I'm this little, tiny little earthling in this great, mysterious planet. And so this is a huge revolution in awareness. And often we human beings, we say, the earth is just here to extract and to use and to and we need more of this and more of this mineral. We will get into that later, but
when you speak of the air and the water and all that sustains us, I often think if we, especially in our Western world, really grasp the significance of how privileged we are to turn on the tap and get clean drinking water every day. There are people in other parts of the world that do not have that privilege. And just as you spoke about that water, that popped into my head again. You know, it's something every moment to be thankful, this sip of water that we take that sustains us as human beings here. And that's just one small part of this discussion, but it came in at the moment.
No, I think, thank you. You know, we're mostly water. You know that, right? We don't just drink water, our bodies. Our brains especially, our brains have more percentage of water than the rest of our bodies. The majority of our body is water, hydrogen and oxygen. So we are water beings, you know, we're water creatures, water critters. Even though we're not in the ocean like we used to be, you know, our ancestors were in the ocean. We crawled out onto this terra firma, going to be flooding, going to be mega storms, but we're being positive today. So, yes, and as you said, there are billions of people who wish they could turn on a tap and drink clean water, and everyone needs that, every being needs that, every animal, every plant, every human needs that water. So, in the prologue, it's very, very brief. And as you said, it's mostly questions to sort of prepare the reader for the rest of the book. Sort of like, hey, let's ask all these huge questions. And then let's start looking at what's going on, the crises we face, let's envision a hope for future, which we're going to talk about later.
Just was going to say, I think it's 29 in the prologue. You know, if every human being is born with universal human rights, and I wanted to work us toward that. So in whatever you're saying, we'll work toward that, because I believe that most people do not understand that we have a universal declaration of human rights, and we may not, as a society, as individuals, understand what our rights are as human beings.
Very important.
With the prologue, you bring that up, and I think it's really a very significant piece of information to get out to more and more people.
Absolutely, yes. Again, as you look at the whole history of humanity, it's very recent. The UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights was created after World War II, so think how recent it is. Eleanor Roosevelt was on the committee. She was one of the people on the task force, and people from all over the world. And now 193 countries have adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, all the member states of the UN. So I would invite people to Google it, to read it. I was looking at it again today, and I won't read all the articles. There are over 27 articles. But the one that really jumped out at me today was Article 25. Everyone has the right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of him, herself, and of his, her family. Everyone on planet Earth, including food, clothing, housing, and medical care, and necessary social services, and the right to security in the event of unemployment, sickness, disability, widowhood, old age, or other lack of livelihood in circumstances beyond his or her control. Wow. Then Article 26, and again, I'll just read a couple of sentences, because it's this again, 193 countries have adopted this, and these are just a couple of the almost 30 articles. Everyone has the right to education, everyone, Education shall be free. Okay, you get that? At least in the elementary and fundamental stages. Elementary education shall be compulsory. Technical and professional education shall be made generally available, and higher education shall be equally accessible to all on the basis of merit. Education shall be directed to the full development of the human personality and to the strengthening of respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms. It shall promote understanding, tolerance, and friendship among all nations, racial or religious groups, and shall further the activities of the United Nations for the maintenance of peace. Wow. I'm so glad you brought this up. I invite the listeners to, as I said, to Google, to read the summaries, the excerpts. It's so inspiring. And again, to realize that this isn't pie in the sky. This is something 193 countries have adopted. Now, how well are we doing living by them? Sometimes not so well. But again, it's a part of our imagination now. We have this vision. We have this agreement that this is what it means to be a human being. You know, we human beings honor each other. We help each other. We enable each other with education and health and housing and food and security and peace. So we can come back to this starting point. Thank you so much for mentioning this. It's so important. We can implement the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in our own lives, you know? You and I can do it. We don't have to wait for our country or our state or our city, our county. I can live the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. You can live it. Our listeners can live these rights in honoring others. And so, again, as I said, right now in our society, it seems everyone is screaming at each other and saying, oh, but you're stupid and you're wrong and you don't deserve to live and you don't deserve to vote and you don't deserve. So we say, no, wait, hey, slow down, okay, breathe. Okay, now, let's talk. Let's just talk together. Try to listen to each other. And it's not easy. It's not easy, I admit, you know, to, when you know somebody doesn't agree with you and doesn't like you or appreciate you or even want you to go away, it's hard. It's hard. It's very hard. It's very hard. So it takes a lot of strength and courage and care of yourself. The book seems to be all about social, economic, environmental, political vision and strategies and actions. But the last chapter, we'll deal with that later, but just to mention, is on how you take care of yourself in all this, because this is not easy. You know, embodying, catalyzing, creating a compassionate community and world, it's hard work. And so the last chapter, we talk about practices for caring for oneself, one's own mind, one's own body, one's own being, and one's neighbors and friends and colleagues. And how do we practice that care? You know, through mindfulness and through meditation, through awareness and breathing and good health and happiness. Because happiness, I love the way of talking about happiness, that happiness isn't a goal. You know, that, oh, out there, someday I might be happy if I have A, B, and C, if I have this much money or this much. Happiness is a decision to live now, as now. And that's not so easy, but happiness is saying yes to embracing what is real and what is. And, you know, I say, as someone who's 79, if I'm going to be happy, I've got to be happy as a 79-year-old. I can't be happy as a 40-year-old or a 20-year-old. I've got to say, okay, my body is a little iffy, and my mind, my memory, but I can smile, breathe, be happy, care for my loved ones, myself, and for everyone around me. So I just wanted to mention that we'll get to that last chapter later.
Well, actually, I think that's a fabulous place to be, to start, because isn't that where we begin? Right here. We begin with ourselves and what we radiate out to the world and to each individual on a day-to-day basis. So, no, I think that's a great place to start, Rob, speaking about happiness. I am right there with you. And I believe that, you know, one of our main purposes of being here is to experience joy. And we can experience joy in so many ways. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to wait until I get my new car. I right now personally am ecstatic with the thought of spring happening. I saw crocuses yesterday, and I'm getting chills. It's just, it really is here now. Spring is here. I saw a crocus. It's confirmed. And whatever it is that brings us joy in a moment, from moment to moment, and recognize that we can choose that. Like you say about happiness, you choose to be happy in whatever age you're in right now and accept that that's where you are. And see, it really is about understanding our perceptions and understanding that we have choices in how we respond to those perceptions. So that is the beginning. That is the very beginning of how we are creating a new world, having that understanding, self-care. So thank you for bringing that up now.
I'm with you on that. Every year I wait for the first sign of yellow, you know, and then as I celebrate, yellow is my favorite color, so I celebrate the appearance of yellow.
Chapter one speaks about our time of crisis and the opportunities before us. And what I wanted to do today was, instead of talking about how everything is changing, that if we were to speak to what we can do to create this compassionate civilization, within the first paragraph, and I can have you read that, that we will see what the challenges are by understanding what it is we want to create in our future now. We go to page 9, chapter 2, and you say, well, what then is the big picture and the overreaching narrative of our times? Would you like to read that first paragraph? I think this is huge, this first paragraph.
Okay. What then is the big picture, the overarching narrative of our times? Is it inevitable that we are moving through a time of systems collapse, suffering, and death? Or could something else be emerging? What if the breaking down of our unsustainable, unjust, authoritarian, unequal, and divisive systems is forcing us to reinvent these systems based on healthy and hopeful principles of sustainability, justice, participation, equality, and inclusiveness? What if these crises are really opportunities to redesign our societies as part of a new empathic civilization of sustainable human development that works for everyone? We must trust our imagination and our vision, not just our feeling of sadness, our feeling of change comes with challenge and difficulty or even suffering. And then we realize later, oh, look, something new is being born. And birth is painful, right? I've never had a baby myself, but I know it's painful to give birth. And so the earth is giving birth, humanity is giving birth, and it's painful, but we must believe and trust.
In order to make room for something new to happen, something else has to get out of the way. We have to have a in a rebirthing process, it's necessary to see what no longer works so that that can be replaced with what does work. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, and that happens on every level of being. I mean, mm-hmm. it happens in nature every day. Trees die and new trees are born. A branch breaks off of a tree and three new branches come out of the tree. And that's the similar process that we're going off right now. A branch is being cut off of the systems that have been in place for many years since this country has developed. And those branches are dying off now. And they're dying off so that new branches can emerge and emerge with fresh new leaves and a way that, you know, looks to the sky and says, here I am. And I believe that this is a process we just see in every facet of life, the microcosm, the macrocosm. It's happening everywhere on every level. And every human being right now is going through that similar process. We have to be along with what's going on the planet, what's going on with our government, and all the systems that have been in place for so long. It's very exciting.
Yes, if not for the weak of heart.
So then you go into saying that in this time of crisis, it can take us into a new way of being for everyone. And empathy has always been a deep part of the human psyche, and now being called by necessity for survival's sake to emerge as the driving force for a new civilization of mutuality and care. And it's been proven that people care about each other. Then on page 10, you say human beings are fundamentally empathic because we're deeply interconnected with one another and recognize ourselves in each other. And so what this chapter does is speak to our vision of what is emerging and how we... What I love about this chapter, Rob, is you express this in how, where we are evolving toward. And that's the reason why I wanted to select this chapter today of how we are moving toward a compassionate civilization and what each area speaks to. Reinvent nothing less than human society itself from the bottom up and the top down based on principles of sustainability, equality, justice, participation, tolerance, and nonviolence. And you have a chapter, a mini chapter for each of these. And that is what I think I would love to see us go through. You say on page 14, for me, combining compassion and civilization provides an inspiring vision of a macro historical societal system infused with a powerful ethical stance based on human nature itself. And my hope is that this concept will empower those of us working to create a better world, a world that works for everyone and protects the environment, and one that is both pro-people and pro-planet. I love that. So on page 15, a practical vision. I turn that over to you.
Well, today we celebrate the victory before the victory. We celebrate the emergence of a new civilization of compassion. It is even now in our midst. It is often hard to see, given the chaos and suffering surrounding us and filling our minds, yet we see it again and again in the many simple acts of kindness between and among people. Earlier, I shared a few thoughts about a compassionate civilization just to get things started, before sharing a few concrete images of a vision of a new civilization of compassion. I should first say something about the nature of visioning. I agree with the statement, where there is no vision, the people perish. Having a sense of where you are going, or more importantly, where you want to go, is very important to human motivation and happiness. If we are cut off from a sense of a meaningful future, it is often hard to live in this moment. However, the good news is that this moment is full and perfect and contains memories, anticipations, and the gift of the eternal now. The more visceral and experiential our vision is of a hope for future, the more motivation we have to move toward it. It is what Dr. Jean Houston calls the lure of becoming. We are literally pulled and pushed toward an attractive image and vision of a future that we desire. When we begin to envision a new civilization of kindness and happiness, we must do so on many levels and dimensions. We will experience this vision with our five senses, with our mind's eye, through stories and symbols, and with a profound sense of embodiment. We will also envision a hope for future in terms of the new mindsets, behaviors, cultures, and systems that will comprise it.
It has begun.
It has begun.
I like this, speaking to imagining. Imagine. We create an energy as we imagine, and it goes out. It ripples out into the world, even if it doesn't seem like anything is happening, because in our mind, we might be sitting in a park one day and just all of a sudden get this vision of people communing together in a joyful way. The sun is shining, there's fresh water, there's droplets of glistening water from the sun's rays, and children are dancing and laughing, and everybody's having a good time, elders and children and everyone in between. And even if we're just sitting there all by ourselves, and this is going on in our mind's eye, we have now created an energy pathway that can ripple out into the world. And we have
beautiful
to the finger.
To care for your own mind, so important, so basic.
Yes, and this is the beginning of, I love that you put Jean Houston's in there, that lure of becoming. I believe we all want this. I know that that's what you believe as well. We all want this loving place to live in, and we want it for everyone. So then it goes on. Imagining a hoped-for civilization of compassion. Yes, we need to be clear on the crises, the problems, the challenges, but we also need to dream of a new world that is so attractive that it beckons us and motivates us to create it. Beckons us, the lure of becoming. I love that. And here's the important things coming up now, your questions. What are your greatest hopes for the future? What indeed is possible? What is necessary? And what would a new civilization of compassion look like?
Well, compassion in the first instance is not religious or even spiritual. It's a natural response of living beings who have empathy for each other and want to help each other. Parents are one of the best examples of compassion. They will do anything to help relieve the suffering of their children and to help them be happy. A compassionate civilization is the universalization of this quality of compassion directed toward all beings everywhere, or it can be called love or care or being neighborly or helpful. What might a new compassionate civilization look like? It will be based on six principles: sustainability, equality, justice, participation, tolerance, and nonviolence. So I thought it would be helpful to start with values, principles, and then to ground them with examples. But what you're making me aware of is that, yes, I'm sharing some examples. I go on and we can go over these. From my mind, my thoughts, my experience, but I would love to have workshops and ask or everyone I meet these questions. You know, what are your hopes for the future? And get people talking about it in the town square, you know, in the marketplace, because again, there's so little dialogue going on. We must stop yelling at each other and start asking each other questions and listening to each other. And it's hard, as I said earlier, but necessary.
I love this town square because I've expressed to you before that social media is valuable, but there's nothing like really sitting together as a group of people or one-on-one and really in that moment having the energies between us. We lose that through this media of internet and so on, even as valuable as it is. So we will speak to that. I think we're going to do something and start getting groups together live and in person. I like that.
I just had this vision of workshops in Asheville asking people about their hope for the future and how to create it. So yeah, may that happen.
You can take each area because we talked about the six principles. And the first one you have is environmental sustainability.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, these are the six. So here I combine the principles with areas or arenas. So environmental sustainability, gender equality, socioeconomic justice, participatory governance, cultural tolerance, and peace and nonviolence. So the first one is environmental sustainability, or now I think the buzzword is ecological regeneration. The new civilization of compassion will embody environmental sustainability at its very core. As Naomi Klein writes, climate change isn't just a crisis, it's a chance to build a better world. We will protect the natural environment. People will realize that there can be no human life without healthy ecosystems of air, water, soil, plants, and animals. We will keep the remaining fossil fuels, which is death energy, in the ground. All energy will be from renewable sources, such as the sun, wind, water, and algae, or life energy. The new economy will be 100% environmentally friendly or ecologically regenerative. The Green Revolution will sustain life on Earth for millions of years.
More and more people are understanding, and more will come to understand. And this is what we are working toward. And again, let's imagine that. Imagine breathing the clean air, having clean water all over the world.
May we wake up to realize we are earthlings. We're not social beings, we're beings of this Mother Earth. And if we love ourselves, we will love and care for the water and the soil, the air, the plants, the animals. May it be so.
I had a moment, an experience. I was on a train in Spain, and I looked out at the mountains, and I knew in that moment that the earth is us and we are the earth. You know, we spoke earlier about how I am you and you are me, and how we are beginning to recognize each other as ourselves. My hope is for people to get the understanding that we are also the earth and she is us. And what she is going through right now is also a revolution for humanity itself. And I feel this so deeply every day because I love the earth so much. She is my beloved. And then this speaks back to where in the beginning, where you were speaking of the first place we begin is with our own self-care, our own water, our own soil, our own plants. This is the very beginning where it must, this is the seed. We are the seed. So may it be so.
Indeed. Yes, and as you said, people are waking up. There are more and more. I love it. And the youth, the sunrise movement. You know, the youth are out in the streets and saying, "Hey, Greta Thunberg is out every day, and her friends, and all over the planet." And not only the youth, but the old folks, us old folks. The Bill McKibben has formed a group called the Third. What is it? The Third Chapter, sort of the elder activists, and so everybody from the youth to the elderly are waking up, and may it continue. It must. It will.
It is. I believe that it has begun so much. We are in it. The energy, the ripple is becoming greater every day, every moment, every day. That's my vision.
Yes. And you have to keep reminding yourself of that when you become sad or depressed or you lose hope. Keep caring for your own mind, your own body, and giving yourself hope. The hope, first gratitude, the gratitude for being alive, breathing the air, and hope for the future, even if there will be struggle the next few months or years. The future is long. What the past is long. What the cosmos is 13.8 billion years old. And the sun will not burn up the earth and for another, I think it's 7 billion years. So we have time, Mary Alice. We have time. We have time to evolve and to fall in love again and to care for the whole cosmos, starting with our planet and our solar system and our galaxy and then... But let's just stay with, I don't want to leave our planet. I'm not a big planet leaver. I think let's just love Earth. That's a big job. That's a huge job.
I like to do the hug a planet. Eons ago, it was a pillow and it on one side, it was an elephant. And when then you turned it inside out and it was Mother Earth and it was called Hug a Planet. And I don't know, it's long gone. I gave it to some child somewhere along the way. However, I still hug the planet on a very regular basis. I just see myself that my arms get huge, just around Mother Earth and just give her a huge, huge hug. That's one of my favorite things to do. It's just, and I think it's actually a very powerful thing to do. It seems like not. I used to stand on the beach in the mornings, and that was like one of my morning rituals. I still just love to hug the earth. She needs it, which says that we all need that big hug to keep us going. Hug Mother Earth.
And you created a global heart to heart, your global vision, your earth vision of earth heart to heart, global heart to heart. Thank you. Gender equality. A compassionate civilization will embody gender equality in every facet of human society. Women will be leaders at every level of society. They will be paid the same as men for the same work. The voices, views, and wisdom of women will be honored and celebrated. Men will respect and protect the sovereignty of women's bodies and minds. Gender and sexual orientation will be understood and accepted as taking a multiplicity of forms. Women who hold up half the sky will be free to be whom and what they are. May it be so. It's happening, but there's more work to be done.
Well, it seems that we had taken many steps forward and recently have taken a few steps back, but perhaps that is going to propel us to go even further than we were. That's my vision. Be in this stepping back motion, that it must mean it's going to propel us much further in the long run.
Yes, thank you. I agree.
Socioeconomic justice.
A compassionate civilization will embody socioeconomic justice. Everyone will have meaningful engagement, adequate income, and access to high quality education and health services as a human right. We will reinvent money as a means of caring for all life on Earth and stop the endless drive for profit extraction, consumption, production, and wealth accumulation for a few. We will learn sacred economics from Charles Eisenstein, with capital not being based on debt and interest. Bartering will increase. Local currencies will be developed. We will create local, national, and global economies that are pro-people and pro-planet. We will make the shift from an economy based on greed to an economy of generosity. And here I want to hold up Kate Raworth, a professor at Oxford, whose brilliant work on donut economics is reinventing economics. That economics is about social justice and ecological regeneration, not about profit for a few and extraction and consumption. So thank you, Kate, wherever you are. Everyone, get Kate's book, Donut Economics, incredible book. Google it, Donut Economics, Kate Raworth, R-A-W-O-R-T-H.
We can also list that as a link. I'll make a note of that. And what is sacred economics, Rob?
Yeah, we should list some of Charles Eisenstein's books. I don't think I have it here in my office library, but he has a book by that name. People should Google it, or we can put a link on this podcast where he's reinventing economics, that economics is about caring for people and planet. He calls it sacred economics. I won't get up and go look at my books to see if I have it there, but let's put a link for Kate's book and for Charles' book.
Yes, we will do that. Because I just even like the sound of that, sacred economics, to bring us to a place of a whole different way of approaching it.
An incredible speaker and writer, a visionary, a powerful, powerful visionary. So I hope our listeners will listen and read Charles Eisenstein.
And now back to Sustainable Development Goals from the UN with participatory governance.
Participatory governance. A compassionate civilization will embody participatory governance to achieve the UN's Sustainable Development Goals. The needs, voices, views, and wisdom of all people will set the policy agendas for society through new processes and institutions of direct democracy. This will include face-to-face and online policy dialogue. Accountability, transparency, and responsiveness will be present at all levels of governance. E-governance will bring policymaking closer to the people. So again, as we said, we see in many countries democracy being weakened, but our vision can be that democracy will be strengthened and everyone's voice, everyone's concern, everyone's perspective will flow into governance. I love that term, participatory governance. I'm actually writing a new essay on it for Substack, for my Compassionate Civilizations essays on how to strengthen participatory governance. Did you know this year there are 4.5 billion people are going to the polls, or at least countries with 4.5 billion people are having elections this year. So it's the Forbes said that this year more people are voting than at any time in human history. And I know our country, where I'm very deeply concerned, I know many of us are, about our elections this year in this country. So let's get out the vote. Go TV, get out the vote. We gotta keep speaking the truth.
Must vote. I, like myself, I'm at, you know, I can be having lunch somewhere or in line at the co-op and just remember to vote. Remember to vote. It's the new mantra. Be sure to vote.
Exactly.
Because if we don't, our fragile democracy is really at stake. It is more at stake than it ever has been.
I agree with you completely. Yes. And so we, there's so much misinformation going around and criticizing, you know, the president is too old or the, but we've got to, it's not about age. I mean, I'm just 2 years younger than Biden, and I so respect him for taking this on. I would never want to be president of the United States at any age, but certainly not at 81. So that he has the energy and capacity and guts and will to every morning wake up and do everything he can with his incredible cabinet. I mean, his the administration cabinet is incredible. You know, the people leading the different parts of the government in his administration. So I would I hope we get out the vote, keep democracy in place. It's as you said, we can lose it, use it or lose it. And so if we don't vote, we could lose it. So thank you for calling everyone you see to vote. 'Cause the Sunrise Movement pushed Biden to create a youth climate change group, and he did it. The U.S. now has a youth climate volunteer group, and youth can join. And this administration also has the strongest climate change legislation of any administration we've ever had. Yes, and we've got to protect Roe versus Wade. We got to protect a lot of rights, as you said, that we don't want to slide back on women's rights and other rights. So, and voting. I mean, some people want to take voting away. You know, they're cutting the number of voting places. They're making it harder for rural people to vote. Some countries, you know, have mandatory voting. There are several countries that have mandatory voting. I wish we had that in the United States, mandatory voting. And I also wish we had, we need an election holiday, you know? Election day should be a holiday so people don't have to take off from work. It should be a holiday. So everybody can zip on down and do their thing. So there are many ways of strengthening democracy, strengthening the electoral process, strengthening representation of people's views and voices and hopes. But there's some of the wealthy and powerful are pushing the other direction. You know, they want to remain in control. They want to remain in power. So we the people must rise and vote and speak and march and do everything we can in a nonviolent manner.
Well, perhaps we will see with groups like the Sunshine Group, maybe a group will be formed to create this new way of governance in our country, where it is mandatory to vote. And voting day is a federal holiday. This is, again, our vision for the future mm-hmm. we're creating now.
Exactly.
Yes, victory.
The victory before the victory. Victory, really? A compassionate civilization will embody cultural tolerance. It will be understood and accepted that all people of every race, ethnic background, religion, economic class, lifestyle, orientation, and nationality will be respected and free to exercise their rights as human beings. People will enjoy learning from others who have different backgrounds and orientations to life. Empathic consciousness will be the new common sense. An evolutionary Earth story will be understood by all. May it be so.
I love, yes, we will need this, everyone. This really requires an opening of our mind, creating new neural pathways around how we view one another. I grew up in a city mostly, and I always thought it was fabulous that there were other people other than my culture because I learned from them. It was exciting. And I never understood why it's not for other people. At least we need to honor others in whatever that otherness is, even if we don't agree with it. If we don't embrace it, we don't have to try to change it or push it away either. And that, in a sense, is embracing by allowing it to be. And we've said this before, allowing everyone to be who they are and honoring that. No matter what we look like, where we live, what our cultural mores are, it's to each his own. We'll create a oneness.
Yes.
And if America is a melting pot, then it is a melting pot, not just for some, but for all people.
Melt away.
And that brings us to peace and nonviolence.
Peace and nonviolence. A compassionate civilization will embody peace and nonviolence. There will be no nuclear weapons. War itself will be seen as illegitimate. A culture of peace will prevail as everyone comes to understand empathy and compassion as the underlying foundations of being human. Oh my. I know we're also aware now of the wars going on, the violence going on. The guns are now the number one cause of death in the United States of America of children. More children die of gun violence than of cancer or car accidents or anything. And so many of us are worried about Ukraine and Palestine and Israel and many, many, many places around the world. But it's we're on a path. We're not there yet, but the vision. Thank you for reminding us of the importance of the imagination and of vision and of hope and of dreams. So we must keep dreaming and embodying those dreams and hoping and embodying those hopes and imagining and embodying our imagination. May it be so. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for Global Heart to Heart, and thank you for all you do and say and be, and all you out there in listener land. May you be happy. May you dream. May you embody your dreams. May your dreams come true.
And so it is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Beautiful place to leave off. That was a beautiful ending.
Yes. Thank you, Mary Alice. Thank you.
Well, I think that's a good place to end. And Rob, thank you so much for taking the time to share your insights with us today. Thank you again. I look forward to our next discussions as we move through your book. And I thank you, my listeners, for listening and considering the questions before us at this critical time in the evolution of humanity. I urge you to explore A Compassionate Civilization, a book for anyone who cares about what's happening in our world right now. The language is simple. The content is informative. Rob asks us purposely thought-provoking questions, as well as asking us to act and act with urgency for the highest good of all concerned. I invite you and encourage you to read and share A Compassionate Civilization and to learn more about Robertson Work and his global activism on robertsonwork.com. This interview will be aired on Global Heart to Heart Radio and can be heard at any time on globalhearttoheart.com in the podcast section. If you haven't already listened to my initial interview with Rob, you can sign on to globalhearttoheart.com and check it out in the podcast section. You can also hear Rob recite a few of his poems on globalhearttoheart.com in the Poet's Corner. Thank you again for listening to Robertson's work, Reflections and Recommendations for Creating a Compassionate Civilization. You will be hearing more on Global Heart to Heart Radio from Robertson Work as we continue the multilogue of how we will create a compassionate civilization now. Please do contact me at maryalice@globalhearttoheart.com with your comments and thoughts. Without you, there is no future. This is Mary Alice, with love from my heart to yours.